schools, the universities, the researchers, for many years they have thought they have a full knowledge of poverty. No. This research has proven that there is a lot of things they don't know.
Almost 10% of the world's population live in poverty. Countless resources have been put toward understanding the economics of poor communities over the decades, and yet most poverty alleviation projects fall short. Why?
If you look at a bus, a big bus, if we stand behind the bus, someone else stands in the front of the bus, you're on the left side and the right side, wherever you stand, no one is seeing the same thing. If you want to draw this bus, you have to ask all these people from wherever they stand to tell you what they have seen. If you ask one, we'll have one side of the bus. Two, we'll have two sides. If you want a whole bus, you ask people from all the sides. That's the same with knowledge.
Martin Kalisa is the deputy director of ATD Fourth World, an anti-poverty organization that builds research teams that include poor people to better understand their needs. Kalisa was in Washington, D.C. to take part in a conference on the hidden dimensions of poverty hosted by the World Bank and the IMF. So when we think of poverty, certain countries and regions come to mind, like, you know, Africa, where your story starts. Tell us a little about the circumstances by which you came to focus your career on poverty alleviation.
Well, poverty is everywhere, in the rich countries, in developing countries, everywhere. And what we've learned in the last years is that wherever you are, when you are poor, you suffer the same. Poverty is when you don't have any dignity. Poverty is when you are not respected, humiliated. And that happens everywhere around the world. In my life, I lived in many, many countries across the globe, which was a good experience. I was born from a family, very Christian family. Mm-hmm. My dad was an evangelist, a Presbyterian evangelist. Mm. So, of course, you know, these are the people who are always living close to very poor people.
Yeah.
When poor people are in trouble, they come to them. So I had many, many people struggling coming to my home, to my house. It's like we lived together, even if not, I was from a very poor family. So when I grew up, I remember I was, I think, about 15. There was a man who was living close to our house. He was very, very poor, extremely poor. And one day when I met him, I asked him, if you meet God, because I had seen him going to church a couple of times, I said, if you meet God, you know he's almighty. And he asks you, tell me one thing I can give you that will make you happy. Of course, I thought I knew the answer. I thought he was going to ask for a house, for money, for wealth, but no. He surprised me. He said, if I meet God, I know exactly what I will ask him. Said what? A goat.
A goat.
I said, are you sure? He said, yeah, with a big, huge smile on his face. He said, you know, Martin, if I have a goat, I will be able to marry my son because his girlfriend's family is asking me for a dowry, and they need a goat, and I don't have it. If I get that, I will be the happiest dad on earth. if I managed to marry my son, I would be a proud dad.
Wow.
I was shocked.
It breaks all the stereotypes of poverty.
And then, because I was still looking for a house or some money, I said, God is generous. If he said two things, what will you say? What will be the second? He said, my God, I will ask God for a radio.
Wow.
I said, a radio? For what? So I can listen to music and to the president's speeches and be happy. Tell you what, I will not ask God for anything else. That's all. I will be the happiest person on earth.
How interesting.
This is very important. I kept in my mind. And now there are many development projects around the world. There are many people who want to support, to help very poor people, to alleviate poverty. But they don't know what people want. That's why in ATD Fourth World, we listen to people. We build the project with them.
Yeah, in fact, I read something, an article that you wrote recently about your experience with a project in Tanzania that you described as being very transformative for you, and where you asked the poor to participate in the research that you were doing there. How did that work, and why do you think that approach is so special?
That approach is called the merging of knowledge. This research in Tanzania, we had a big challenge. It's a research called Hidden Dimensions of Poverty. We conducted this research in six countries: Bangladesh, Tanzania, Bolivia, the United States, the United Kingdom, and France.
Wow.
It lasted for 3 years. Why did we do these six countries? We want to see what was similar or different when we talk about poverty in rich countries and very poor countries. As we see, there are three countries in the global north and three in the global south. So we decide to build research teams. The challenge was, we approached some researchers, well-known researchers, say, this is what we want to do. They said, you must be joking. How can we do a research with people in poverty? Many refused. At the end, we found three very well-known researchers who accepted to try it. When we went to see some families, when we told them the same reaction as researchers, what do you want us to tell them? We don't know anything. We are not researchers. They are the one who know, not us. It was a big challenge. Eventually, we managed to build this team. The first important thing was to get to know each other, to build trust, and to make sure people are on the same footing. They are co-researchers. It's not the academics, the poor people, and whatsoever. It's a research team, what we've called national research team, composed of all these three people from different backgrounds. It was a big team. The challenge was to build trust for the academics and for the poor people,
yeah,
because all of them were scared, one scared of the other, because they never meet in a normal life. And this time, they were going to meet with a challenge of researching together and to discover that poor people, they have a knowledge no one else has.
Yeah.
This is what we call the merging of knowledge. we can't have anti-poverty policies, build anti-poverty policies without asking the very poor people who have an expertise, 1 year, many, many generations of experience of struggling. If we build anti-poverty programs and projects and policies without taking into account what the knowledge of people have this experience, we will never succeed. In Africa, many other continents, the International Development Cooperation has injected billions for the last 30 years. Countries are still poorer. Why? Mm-hmm. We build roads, we build schools. We can't support, help people if we don't ask them how they live and what is important for them and what can be done. And you build a common knowledge. You tell them what you know. They tell you what they know. You put together. You build a common knowledge and a common project. That's how it should work.
Yeah, and that explains why there has been, pretty significant advancements in terms of development in various countries around the world. But when you look at the amount of investment and resources that have been put towards helping countries develop, we have not really succeeded.
Definitely.
In moving that forward. It's so interesting what you're saying. And I appreciate, how you've mixed it up in terms of poverty in the global South and in France and, in United States. What have you found in terms of the commonalities of poor people, in those countries?
When we're working on these projects, of course, we had to find some common dimensions. There is the usual dimension of the World Bank, the IMF, it's income, housing, health, education, all that. This is known. If you are sick, you don't go to hospital, you are in trouble. Of course we know. If it's cold, you don't have where to sleep. It's dangerous. We know that. But the poor show us the hidden dimensions of poverty. I can give you a couple of examples. One of the dimension everyone has never thought about is institutional maltreatment. They are not very well treated by institutions. And in many countries, this happens very often. People have told us that services, they take them as numbers, not people. They are in numbers. Many families, many children are taken into care, are put for adoption, simply because their parents are poor. Of course, poverty puts children in danger if they are not fed. If they don't have a heating when it's cold, if the gas has been cut off, of course they are cold. Does that mean they are bad parents? I don't think so. They don't have money. And for many institutions, not having money means you are a bad parent.
Yeah.
That's what the poor have told us. It's unacceptable. It's like we have the human beings that are somewhat special and others who are made, I don't know of what, who don't suffer. These are the poor who don't have emotions. For them, it's okay. That's what we call institutional maltreatment. We didn't have that definition in the beginning. They pointed it out and said how this makes them suffer to be treated differently. Sometimes people are making the policies. They don't even have a clue of what is going on. People are building projects. They don't merge their knowledge to know what is going on and to build strong, solid policies.
And so I was going to ask you about that. In terms of how much influence does ATD Fourth World have in terms of building these social policies? I mean, how closely do you work with governments to design social policies that are perhaps, you know, informed by your organization's work in the field?
I think, to be fair, ATD has achieved a lot, and we really want to achieve more, but it's hard work. That's why we are here, why we came to see the staff of the IMF and the World Bank. Because, as you know, the IMF and the World Bank, they are two big international financial institutions.
Yeah.
With many projects, with many governments, with projects in many countries, in developing countries and other countries. We want them to know that you can't support the poor if you don't build with them, if we don't take into account their knowledge. We want to disseminate the findings of this research we have been doing in these countries. And from this research, we have built what we call an inclusive, deliberative implementation, elaboration, and evaluation of policies tool. This what we'll be talking about at the conference at the World Bank. This tool has been built to help institutions, NGOs, government, community-based organizations to give them the tool that will help them to build anti-poverty policies and programs which take into account the knowledge of the very poor people, of people with the first experience of poverty, professionals, researchers, policymakers, to be able to capture the complete knowledge of what is going on in a community, a complete knowledge of the need of the community, and a complete way forward.
To see all four sides of that bus you described earlier.
That's it. And that will be the base, a strong foundation to build on any project. Many projects are built on very fragile foundation, and they collapse. They collapse. They've been collapsing for many years. They are still collapsing. And what we are offering to the World Bank, to the IMF, is that we can accompany them if they are willing to see how it works. It's a tool that can be used by anyone.
So just to end here, you know, you mentioned the conference that you're here for, and it's hosted by the World Bank and the IMF, which is generally very much focused on financial stability. To what degree is poverty a risk to the global economy? You know, why should people care about this issue?
One man I met in 2000, I remember very well, a very poor man, very, very poor man in Belgium. When I spoke to him, he said, "Martin, I tell you what, as far as our neighbors are living in poverty, we will never, never have peace. Never." So I really think all of us together, we better work for peace. As far as our neighbors are suffering, as far as our neighbors can't eat, as far as our neighbors are suffering from exclusion, from humiliation, you know, we will not have peace. And it's very, very important for all of us who care for the environment, for all gender-related problems. We care as well for one another as human beings. we will have peace. And it's very, very important for these institutions to make sure people are working on the ground. They know what people want. They know what is important for them. They build strong foundations for anti-poverty programs to stand on very solid foundation. That's how we'll fight against poverty. That's how we eradicate poverty everywhere.
Martin Kalisa, the Deputy Director of ATD Fourth World. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Again, that was ATD Fourth World Deputy Director Martin Kalisa. To learn more about the IMF World Bank Conference on addressing the hidden dimensions of poverty, go to imf.org. And look for more IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on X, what used to be Twitter, at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.